Maine's lighthouses. There are 65 lighthouses in Maine, standing sentry over 5,000 miles of coastline. For more than two centuries, they have guided and protected commercial vessels and pleasure cruisers, windjammers and kayakers. Several serve as major tourist attractions and backdrops for novels and movies. Local organizations raise money to restore and protect lighthouses, recognizing that they are a beloved and meaningful part of Maine's history and culture. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Perhaps you have a favorite lighthouse. Down East Magazine did a survey for this month's issue, ranking Maine's lighthouses in popularity. We'll find out which one came out on top, and we'll learn what it's like to take care of a Maine lighthouse. Today's show is part of our ongoing coverage of topics that reflect what is iconic in Maine. That's next, but first, news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Lighthouses are one of the best-known features of Maine's landscape. They have stood tall along the coastline here for centuries. Today, we will learn about the history of these beacons and about their lasting importance to our state. This is part of Maine Calling's ongoing coverage of topics that reflect what is iconic in Maine. Joining me in the studio, Jeremy D'Entremont. He is president of the board of directors and historian for the American Lighthouse Foundation. Scott Dombrowski is the longtime lighthouse caretaker of Goat Island Lighthouse. And Benjamin Williamson is staff photographer for Down East Magazine, which is featuring Maine's lighthouses in its current issue. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you visited different lighthouses in Maine? Have you ever lived in one? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We are really hoping to hear some great stories about Maine lighthouses today. Welcome to all three of you. Jeremy, you're a lighthouse historian. I know that mankind has had lighthouses since at least the Roman times. Do we know when man first built a lighthouse to navigate ships?
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the ancient civilizations had basic lighthouses. If you consider like a stone column with a fire on it to be a lighthouse, you know, the ancient Greeks and the ancient Romans, the Phoenicians had very simple lighthouses. But the it's often thought that the pharaohs of Alexandria around close to 300 BC was basically the first major lighthouse in the world at the mouth of the Nile, built by the Macedonian Empire at the mouth of the Nile.
And that one was supposedly really tall, right?
Yeah, it was about 400 feet tall.
Amazing. Just amazing. So tell us about Maine lighthouses. I think most people think that Portland Head is the oldest. Is that true?
Portland Head is the oldest lighthouse in Maine, 1791. It's the third oldest standing lighthouse tower in the country. And it is probably the most visited lighthouse in the world as well.
Okay. What about the newest lighthouse? When's the last time we built a lighthouse in Maine?
That would be the Whitlock's Mill Lighthouse, which is also the northernmost lighthouse in Maine. It's on the border with New Brunswick, Canada, up on the St. Croix River in Calais, Maine.
Okay. Well, Ben, one of the reasons we're doing this show today as opposed to 2 months from now is because Down East Magazine is all about lighthouses. I understand this was your idea.
It was my idea definitely to do a lighthouse issue. The ranking part sounded a little controversial to me, but it was a lot of fun to put this story together. I really enjoyed it.
So the ranking part was controversial. If you haven't seen the Down East Magazine, we're ranking Maine's favorite lighthouses. And you all did a survey, right? You didn't decide it among yourselves.
Actually, we decided amongst ourselves. We had a staff meeting. We got together, went out in the woods with about seven of the editors. And then kind of had a battle royale where we each gave presentations on which lighthouses we thought should be ranked high. And it was tough for me as the photo guy because I wasn't able to hold up photos of each lighthouse and say we should rank this one. Instead, it was storytelling. And we got really into the stories behind the lighthouse and, you know, why they should be ranked higher than any of the other ones. And it was really fun. So
which
no survey.
One won?
Ended up being Pemaquid Point Lighthouse. Hmm.
And why do you think?
Well, I think it had a lot of just cachet being on the state quarter. It's such a main icon in that the rocks around there are just spectacular, the scene. And I think it's about as main as it gets as far as lighthouses.
Okay. You took beautiful, beautiful photographs. But, you know, you mentioned, Jeremy, how photographed Portland Head is, for example. People take pictures of lighthouses all the time. Did you find it especially challenging, and did you find it difficult to think of unusual ways to capture Maine's lighthouses?
Yeah, there are definitely cliched ways of capturing the lighthouses, and I'm probably guilty as anyone of doing a sunrise at the lighthouse pretty often. But it was fun to get creative and go deep, and it wasn't just my photos. There were other amazing photographers like Jack Milton and the young Dominic Trapani, who's been to so many lighthouses with his dad, Bob. I'm a big admirer of their photography. And they're all super creative and capture lighthouses in different ways.
Well, Scott, I want to bring you into the conversation. I have a feeling I know which is your favorite lighthouse.
I am a little biased towards Goat Island Light Station, for sure.
Because you have lived there for how long now? 33 years?
Yeah. No, actually, we're in our 29th year.
29 years. So sorry to have that wrong. So tell me what it's like. You know, there's all sorts of mythologizing about the lighthouse keeper. Oh, and let me stop. I understand technically the word keeper is not correct for you, probably.
Because I am not a government-paid employee, that is true. But I do refer to myself as a modern-day lightkeeper at times.
Okay. So there's only one lighthouse keeper, and that's the lighthouse keeper in Boston Harbor.
That's correct.
Okay. So what is it like? What is it like to live on an island and take care of a lighthouse?
I tell most people it's really like living on a small farm. You're always pushing, pulling, hauling, moving, painting, repairing, you know, boats, boat ramps, buildings. It's a very busy lifestyle. It keeps you in really good shape, and it's very unique. You get to meet a lot of very interesting people over the summer and get to work with school groups, scouting groups, and so forth in the spring and in the fall also. They help us maintain the light station.
And when you say us, your lighthouse, like so many, is got a local organization that it belongs to and takes care of it and cares about it. Tell us about the organization behind the Goat Island Lighthouse.
Oh, that's true. It's the Kennebunkport Conservation Trust. It's a local land trust. And we were fortunate enough. It was the last manned lighthouse in Maine. And when President Bush went out of office in 1992, we decided to approach the Coast Guard to see if we could get a lease on the property and be able to open it up to the public and be able to have people come out and enjoy such a beautiful place. And that's much of what we do all around Kennebunkport. We provide properties and land and so forth that just enable people to enjoy the beauty of what Kennebunkport is. And we've done the same, and we own most of the islands in Cape Porpoise Harbor. So what is captured there now is what you'll see in a couple hundred years. You won't see marinas. You won't see condos and those types of things.
Jeremy, tell me about the 65 lighthouses in Maine. How many of them are run by an organization like Scott's, a conservation trust, a land trust? How many are privately owned, and how many are still operated by the government?
Well, that's a tough question. I'm not sure I have exact numbers for you
that's
off
okay.
the top of my head, but quite a few of them are run by various nonprofits. It's really a mix of all kinds of situations. There are a few that are still completely owned and operated by the Coast Guard. There are a number that are run by various nonprofit organizations. The American Lighthouse Foundation, which I'm very involved with, actually maintains 17 different lighthouses. They're not all owned by the American Lighthouse Foundation. Some are lease or license situations. But various other nonprofits take care of some of the lighthouses. There are a few that are actually maintained by the state of Maine, or a couple anyway. The West Quoddy Headlight at the easternmost point in the U.S. is part of a state park. Fort Point Light in Stockton Springs, Maine is part of a state park there. And there are several that are under U.S. Fish and Wildlife that are part of the Maine Coastal Islands National Wildlife Refuge. And there are several that are privately owned, several that have been auctioned in recent years. So there's a real mix of a lot of different kinds of situations.
And a couple up for sale right now, right? A couple in Maine?
A couple in Maine that have been privately owned for years that are up for sale right now.
Yeah, and not inexpensive to purchase a lighthouse.
No. Let's see, I'm trying to remember. Ben, do you know which ones are for sale right now? I saw you nodding your head then.
Not currently.
I have Keeper's House on Isla Ho.
Okay, that I think is for sale for about $2 million.
Yep, and the lighthouse on Mark Island with views of Scudic Point and Cadillac Mountain, Acadia National Park, also in that ballpark.
Also known as Winter Harbor Lighthouse, which is absolutely gorgeous. It's such a fantastic property. It's actually been lived in by quite a few writers over the years, so it's a fascinating property. So thanks for reminding me. But those are properties that have been in private ownership for several decades. But there's also a number of lighthouse properties that have been auctioned in recent years under what's called the National Historic Lighthouse Preservation Act. I think there's currently a couple in Michigan that are up for auction. If people go to the GSA, the General Services Administration website, they can find information on those. But none in Maine currently up for auction through that.
Yeah, it's always a big news headline when one does come up for auction. Scott mentioned how much work it is. And I just wanted to ask you a little bit more about that, Jeremy. I know that the American Lighthouse Foundation is really focused on preserving this part of our heritage. Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing just by nature of where lighthouses are, they are really battered. And it must be really expensive and challenging to keep them in good shape.
Absolutely. Even the ones on the mainland, I mean, say, for example, a lighthouse like Portland Headlight in Cape Elizabeth, which is such a big tourist attraction, even a lighthouse like that that is in a fairly, sheltered, protected area, even that is subject to salt air and storms and so forth and takes a battering from the environment. But if you're talking about a lighthouse that's offshore, you know, some of them several miles offshore, a lighthouse like Halfway Rock Lighthouse several miles out in Casco Bay, or a Boone Island Light that's like 8 miles out on a little pile of rocks off the southern Maine coast, they take an incredible beating from winter storms and so forth. And it's a daunting task to maintain these lighthouses. And you can't make money from tourism with those lighthouses. So It's a huge challenge to maintain these lighthouses. And it's the biggest challenge in lighthouse preservation.
We're talking about Maine lighthouses on Maine Calling today. If you have a story about a Maine lighthouse, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Ben, what is it about lighthouses? Why do you think people love them so much?
I can only speak for myself, but I think a lot of the attraction is the idea of people caring for each other. And I really love the reason that they're there is to protect people from crashing on the rocks, to protect sailors. So there's a lot of metaphor there of isolation, but also of our connectedness to each other. As a photographer, they're in the most beautiful locations in Maine. They're heavily exposed, like Jeremy was saying, to the elements. You get really low angled light because the horizon's usually visible from lighthouses. So you get that really beautiful golden light at sunrise and sunset. And extreme storms, waves, wind, that exposure I think is very romantic. And they're also great subjects because they're painted white. And as a photographer, your eye goes to the brightest part of the image first, so I can say the lighthouses are perfectly attuned for image making.
All right. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that it's about caring for one another. And Scott, I understand that, you know, not only has the lighthouse that you take care of guided many ships and sailboats and motor cruisers, but also you have taken part in saving people's lives just because of your location there.
Yes, most certainly. Although we don't have any official role in it, I just treated it as if I were a mariner and I saw somebody in trouble, we would help somebody out. So yes, over the years, I'd say probably 25 of the 29 years, we have assisted either in directly rescuing people or directing a rescue from the top of the lighthouse and being in touch with emergency personnel to get them to to the hazard and where the people are having trouble.
What kind of emergencies have you helped out with? And how did you find out about them? Was it just a basic flare that you saw?
It's everything from a flare on the horizon to hearing a horrendous crash on the rocks to hearing a call come across the police radio or the marine radio. And then, based upon what you hear, looking to see if you can find at times we're the first ones on the scene because we're already out in the water and can respond a lot quicker a lot of times than the fire department can and the other rescue folks. And as long as it isn't too dangerous for us to go out, we will assist in getting the people back to safety.
I understand you raised your children on the lighthouse. What if you had your kids in the studio here today, what would they say about growing up there?
Oh, I think they would just say that it was amazing because it gave them a topic to write about. I think it helped them get into college and graduate school. And whenever you write down your lighthouse keeper kids kind of thing, so what do you mean? Nobody does that anymore. And it always gave them something to talk about. They learned a wonderful lifestyle growing up. Conservation-wise, living on any island, water is always a major factor. And we catch the water off the roof through a gutter system into cisterns. And to have a family of four living on about 15 gallons of water a day is quite a challenge. But that's what we did. And but that has carried through in their lives, in their adult lives, in the way they look at things and the way they conserve and the way they raise some of their own food and have gardens and those kind of things, just like we did on the island.
So do you feel a connection to the prior lighthouse keepers when you're on the island?
Oh, it's a very friendly place. And I would say yes, it's a very warm, welcoming feeling.
Okay. And Jeremy, I'm going to turn to you and ask you the same question that I asked Ben. What is it about lighthouses? Why do people love them so much?
I think it's pretty hard to improve on what Ben said about it. Lighthouses were built for nothing but positive reasons to save lives and property, and I think they have such a resonance for people, such a positive symbolism. There's something about that light in the darkness that symbolizes so many positive qualities for people, so I think that's really a huge part of it, and Ben really summed it up. But for me, I started photographing lighthouses back in the 1980s, and I fell in love with their beauty and the beauty of their surroundings. But then I started to realize how interesting their history is. And for me, it's the human history that really hooked me. So it's a combination of their beauty and the stories of the lighthouse keepers and their families. That's really what's kept me hooked for all these years.
We need to take a break, but when we come back, I'm going to ask you some of those stories of some Maine lighthouse keepers. If you have a story, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Foothills Management, committed to energy-efficient senior housing and commercial space in western and mid-coast Maine. Learn more at foothillsmanagement.com. And Seth Rigoletti, leadership coach, helping organizations and individuals inspire and engage through personal coaching and workshops at sethrigoletti.com.
64 years after Emmett Till was murdered, telling the story of his lynching remains fraught in Mississippi.
The issue of race is still the undercurrent about the discussion of Emmett Till.
Monuments in the state to remember Till are repeatedly attacked by vandals. The ongoing fight to memorialize Till's story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered between 4 and 6:30 today here on Maine Public Radio.
I'm Noelle King, host of Morning Edition. I got my first car when I was 16. It was a clunky Oldsmobile station wagon. I used to drive it up into the mountains and sit on the hood and dream about getting out of my hometown. And then I did. I went away to college, and when I got back, my car wasn't in the driveway. My parents had sold it. I never quite forgave them. But imagine if they donated my car and turned it into my favorite radio shows.
You can do that by visiting mainepublic.org and clicking on support.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are learning about the lighthouses of Maine and their importance to our state. Joining me, Scott Dombrowski, is the caretaker of Goat Island Lighthouse. Ben Williamson is a photographer for Down East Magazine. And Jeremy Dontremont is board president and historian for the American Lighthouse Foundation. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to Molly, who's calling from Isle of Hoe. Hi, Molly. How are you?
Yeah, hi. I'm great. How are you?
Great. Go ahead.
So, yeah, I'm calling from Isle of Hoe, which I believe we have the distinction of the second newest lighthouse in Maine. And first, I'd like to clarify that the lighthouse itself is not currently for sale, but the Keeper's House, which used to be an inn, is, and it's an incredible spot. Anyway, I'm calling because my friend Allison and I are currently swimming around Isle of Hoe to raise money for our island's lighthouse, which is owned by the town, and it's badly in need of renovations. The lighthouse is incredibly important in this community. Fundraising efforts so far have run the gamut from lemonade stands to prospecting for major grants, but the challenge is always figuring out how we can reach beyond our tiny community, which, by the way, we only have 50 year-round residents. And that's how the idea of swimming 18 miles around the island was born. Our goal is to raise $18,000, which is $1,000 for every mile we swim. So far, we've completed 10 legs, which is about 14 miles, and we plan to finish the swim next week.
Oh, it's wonderful.
It's been a great experience so far. So there's more information on our GoFundMe page. You can search Isle of Hoe Swim on GoFundMe.com or visit the Friends of the Isle of Hoe Lighthouse website at islehoelighthouse.org.
And Molly, I invite you to add something to the comments in our Facebook page today. I need to ask you, how choppy is the swimming around Isle of Hoe?
Well, it's funny you ask that. It really depends on where we are. We've been through some sections that have been glass calm. We've been in sections where there were 3 or 4 foot swells and we couldn't see over the tops of the waves. So it really varies depending on the day, but it's just such a cool way to see the island, and it's been a really great rallying point for our community.
Jeremy?
Yeah, I just want to congratulate Molly, and that's fantastic. I did know about that. I actually do a news blog online for the U.S. Lighthouse Society, and I mentioned that in the news of the week last week. So that's fantastic. And to clarify, yeah, the lighthouse on Isle of Hoe is owned by the town of Isle of Hoe. The Keeper's House is privately owned. So thank you for making that distinction. And that's absolutely fantastic what you're doing, and thank you for doing it, Molly. And thank you for calling today.
Yeah, Molly, thanks for calling. We have another call from Isle of Hoe. This is the first time we've had two calls in a row on Maine Calling from Isle of Hoe. Hi, Judith. Go ahead. Judith, if you could turn down your radio, go ahead. Judith, are you there?
I am here.
Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. My husband and I lived at the Keeper's House on Isle of Hoe we ran it as an inn for 23 years, and then our friend Marshall bought it from us. But I actually called because I wanted to put a plug in for Molly and Allison. Allison is our ranger out here, and she lives here also, and Molly is our Island Fellow, and these two women have taken this on as a fundraiser, and it has rallied this whole community together. They're just amazing. They've been doing this. If you can go online and see them do the swim, so you can tell how rough the water is at some point and how calm it is. And they've been on 207, I think it is. And we were kind of hoping Maine Public Radio would do something on them. So maybe, Jennifer, you could put a plug in for them and see if somebody would come up and do a
story. Well, Judith, I think people are hearing about them right now. Thank you so much for calling in and talking about this really fun effort to raise money for the light on Isle of Hoe. I'm going to move on to Barry, who writes on Facebook. Is it true that some of the island lighthouses have been used for practice bombing by the military? I was told that the one I've kayaked by is no longer there due to this practice. Is that true, Jeremy?
Well, I don't know about bombing exactly, but I can tell you that There's a lighthouse called Tubush Island Lighthouse in Penobscot Bay, where the keeper's house was destroyed as a demolition exercise by Green Berets. That was, I believe, around 1970. And a beautiful big keeper's house was demolished as a Green Beret demolition exercise. And the blast was a little bigger than what they planned on. And actually, the brick lighthouse was cracked and the glass was broken in the lighthouse as a result. But as a result, there's no beautiful keeper's house at Tubush Island anymore. Mm. And I'm trying to remember, there was at least one other place where something similar was done as a demolition exercise. But so that there is some truth to that, yes.
We'll go to Paul calling from Portland. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hey, Paul. It's nice to speak with you, Jennifer. I'm enjoying the program.
Great. Go ahead.
Great. My grandparents were Roscoe and Dorothy Fletcher. And from 1929 to 36, they were assistant lightkeeper at Petitman Ann Light off Pigeon Hill Road. And then from 36 to 37 to 45, he was headkeeper at Matinicus Rock Light, which is, I believe, 23 miles out from Rockland. And they had quite rich experience, a whole different way of life. And I'm so fortunate that in their older age, I got them to write down and record on cassette recorder, which I've had transcribed, their experiences. And it's quite rich. If anybody would like a copy or like to talk about that, I'd be happy to share what I have. My mother and her sister were lighthouse kids, and they said, don't feel bad for them that they went to school ashore and lived with their grandparents or aunts. All the lighthouse kids were like that, and it was just normal. It was a normal way of life. And my grandmother remembered the big storm of 37, which is the hurricane of 37. She said she went to bed and was painting her kitchen chairs, went to bed, never thought anything of it. And when she woke up, there was seaweed right against the kitchen door. And that would have been Matinicus Rock Light. If you've ever been by, it's quite amazing. Little chunk of stone that sticks out of the ocean. My mother always credited her love of oil painting. She did scenes and that sort of thing because she loved the smell of the turpentine. At that time, the stone house, which is still there, was used for storage, and the Coast Guard and the men, that's where they stored their paint and rags, and she always remembered the smell of it. They lived in a big double frame house at that time.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for calling and sharing some of the stories about your grandparents. And Jeremy raised his hand. He wants to hear those tapes.
I would love to, absolutely.
So, but it also brings up, I want to ask you about weather. What is the most dramatic weather you've ever experienced, Scott, on Goat Island Light?
Well, it's been quite a challenge, actually. There are times when the weather really comes in hard. It feels like the island is shaking and rocking and rolling and roaring, and the buildings seem to shake. And then probably the most discerning thing is when you get a real heavy storm and you get a wash over on the island. And what I mean by that is you get the water coming over the entire island. It's surrounding all the buildings. It's surrounding the house. You cannot go out. You cannot try to go between buildings. You'd be swept away. But it's pretty unnerving when you're watching this and you see the water hitting the back of the house and you wonder when it's going to stop rising and whether or not you're going to be safe or not.
How often does that happen?
Well, that's an interesting question because I would have told you every 6 to 8 years. But in most recent times, it has actually happened each of the last 3 years. We're seeing the power of the storms increasing, and it's starting to cause some erosion issues on the island.
Interesting. In years past, the lighthouse keeper would have been responsible for keeping the light going during a storm like that. That no longer is part of your responsibilities, right?
That's correct. The lighthouse is automated, but over the years also, because of us being out there, we have assisted a number of times, and I've spoken with the Coast Guard up in South Portland, and they have offered to do different things, and they've kind of walked me through different things when we were having troubles and to save them a trip down there.
You know, our last caller was talking about the experience of being a lighthouse kid. I'd like one of you, maybe Jeremy, you're the right one, to talk about the Flying Santa tradition.
Oh, wow. How much time do you have?
A few minutes.
It goes back to 1929 and something that's very kind of near and dear to me. And it's still going on, actually. The Flying Santa was started by a pilot from Midcoast, Maine. He was originally from Friendship, Maine, named Bill Winkapaw. He flew seaplanes, and he, as a gesture of gratitude to lighthouse keepers and their families, because he would actually use lighthouses as a way of getting back to his home base. He started a seaplane base in Rockland Harbor, and he relied on the lighthouses to some degree, even as a pilot. He started at Christmas time, he started flying over the lighthouses in the Penobscot Bay region and dropping presents out of his plane for lighthouse keepers and their families as a gesture of gratitude. And it was so much appreciated by those people that he started expanding the flights. And then in the mid-30s, a historian from Winthrop, Massachusetts, Edward Rowe Snow, got involved. And he ended up taking over as the Flying Santa. He would hire a plane. He wasn't a pilot. And he continued it for over 40 years. He died in 1980. The Hull Lifesaving Museum near Boston kept it going. And now it's a nonprofit, the Friends of Flying Santa, that keeps it going by helicopter, mainly as a gesture of gratitude to Coast Guard families. And over 1,000 Coast Guard kids are served by the Flying Santa every year now. And it's a thank you to Coast Guard families for all that they do for us. And I'm very involved in that. And it's just a wonderful tradition that's still going strong today.
We'll go to Richard, who's calling from Portsmouth. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to talk about Whaleback Lighthead between Kittery and Portsmouth, how it's a freestanding lighthouse. And I think it's run by the Coast Guard, and it's pretty cool that between there and Fort Foster, you can go to Wood Island, to the life-saving station, and it's just a great kayak ride, and the colors are magnificent at sunset. I've never done it at sunrise, but...
Wow. Well, Richard, thanks for calling and sharing. Jeremy, are you familiar with Whaleback Lighthouse?
It's on my hat, which I have off my head right now, but it's on the floor right here. Whaleback Lighthouse is owned by the American Lighthouse Foundation and managed by its local chapter, the Friends of Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouses. We've done a lot of work on it. We've owned it for 10 years, done a lot of preservation projects. There's nowhere to land a boat there, though, which makes it really difficult. It's just rock, so you take your chances when you go out there. We're going out on Friday, as a matter of fact, for an inspection visit. And we're working to get a docking system installed there, but we're still working on the funding for that. So I could go on, but it's a fantastic place. It's a 70-foot wave-swept granite tower. It's an amazing lighthouse. But the Wood Island Lifesaving Station is an amazing restoration project done by another group that's going to be open as a museum in the coming years. But I think Ben is taking some amazing photographs of those structures as well.
I was going to say, Whaleback's one of the best photo ops. So standing at Newcastle Common in New Hampshire, you can catch the moon rising behind it, which is pretty popular among photographers. And also in the winter, sea smoke. When it's below zero, 10, 20 below, you get really dramatic mist coming off the water. And Whaleback's probably the best photo op for that.
And where is the best place to stand?
Newcastle Common. Right?
Or Great Island Common.
Or Great Island
actually
Common.
The official
I'm
name
sorry,
of the
in
park.
Newcastle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Well, thank you, Richard, for calling. Sarah writes in an email, many years later, I found myself on a 1,500-mile trip to move myself up to Maine, and I made it a goal of mine to go to every single lighthouse on the coast of Maine. Unfortunately, I found out very quickly that many, if not most, are actually located far out at sea and unreachable by foot, and therefore I've only reached 22 of them. My favorite lighthouse is Ladies' Delight Lighthouse in Coppiscante Lake, Maine's only freshwater lighthouse. I bought a kayak just so I could get there, but found the waters to be too choppy and made it about 75% of the way before I had to make the decision to abort mission. What is the story behind Ladies' Delight?
It's funny she mentions that because it took me about 20 years to photograph every lighthouse in Maine, but Ladies' Delight is the only one I really haven't photographed. I've only seen it very distantly. I have not kayaked out to it. A friend of mine did, and I used his photograph in my book, The Lighthouse Handbook, New England. But anyway, I'll do a real quick version of the story behind the name. It was built by a steamship company. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was built by a yacht club to help with navigation on Lake Coppiscante. There was a steamship that would drop people off at their cottages around the lake. And this is a little bit maybe PG-13. I don't know. I think it's okay. But they would drop people off at their cottages, and there was no bathroom on the boat. So the men would do what they had to do off the edge of the boat, and the women would look the other way. But it took so long to drop everybody off that finally, before they made their last stop, they would stop at this one island, and the women would get off on this island with trees on it, and the women would do what they had to do on the island, so the island became known as Ladies' Delight. That's where the name Ladies' Delight comes from, and they eventually put the lighthouse on that island.
I like that. That's a great story. We have to take another quick break. If you have questions for our lighthouse experts, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Local 188, celebrating 20 years of Spanish cuisine in Portland's West End neighborhood, and at local188.com. And Eco Maine, hosting its open house September 28th with free breakfast, kids activities, electronics recycling, and recycling bins. EcoMaine.org.
InSource Renewables is a solar cooperative of workers here based in Pittsfield, Maine. We're involved in the construction of solar energy systems for residences, commercial businesses, and municipalities. Our clients come from all over the state of Maine. They come from a variety of backgrounds, political leanings, age groups. Maine Public is great for that in terms of the breadth of audience that it has in all of those various demographics, as well as the geographic reach. We underwrite on Maine Public because we see Maine Public as a critical asset to the people of Maine. At a time when things are very polarized and we need information that we can trust, that's what Maine Public brings to the table. So, you know, as much as we underwrite with Maine Public to help establish a relationship and familiarity with our brand, we really see it as helping support an institution in the state of Maine that's critical to our future as both Mainers and as well as a Maine business trying to do well by our communities.
You've heard the tones before here on Maine Public Radio and perhaps also on Maine Public Television. Maine Public is the designated primary source for the entire state of Maine emergency alert system, which we transmit to all other stations for broadcast to all listeners and viewers all around the state. This is a valuable and important public service tool to help inform, alert, and warn citizens when situations warrant, and Maine Public's statewide infrastructure enables it to fulfill this vital task and public service.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the importance of Maine's lighthouses to our state's history and culture. Joining me, Ben Williamson. He's a staff photographer with Down East Magazine. Jeremy D'Entremont is with the American Lighthouse Foundation. And Scott Dombrowski lives in the Goat Island Lighthouse. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Molly calling from Gorham. Hi, Molly. Go ahead.
Hi. I thought since this was a double Isle of Hope day, that I'd make it a double Molly day since you already had a Molly calling. I wanted to know, I'm pretty sure there are some pretty good ghost stories from Maine lighthouses, and I wanted to know if they could share some of those.
Okay, Scott.
Well, yes, it's a pretty spiritually active lighthouse down at Goat Island. I guess my first experience with it is I had one of my best friends that was the caretaker during the winters when we used to come in with the kids. And unfortunately, he drowned off of the island back in 2002 in a boating accident. But very shortly after he had his accident, things started to happen on the island. And although I have no sense myself about these presences, I have had a number of people seek me out to get messages to me from my friend Dick Curtis. And we've had a number of things. I was told many years ago that he would make his presence known through the use of electronics. And over the years, for several years, the foghorn would toot once every time I stepped on the island. And there are times when things would turn on and off just on their own. And Just a whole host of things, just to show that my friend Dick's presence is still there, and it has also brought a number of other people out that have had a curiosity and basically found that there's a whole lot of other spiritual presences on the island, everything from some ex like ship captains or lightkeepers, a young boy that fell off of a schooner, and just a whole host of things. And as I meet the ex-keepers from Goat Island, they all have their own stories as well. And although I have never experienced the same things as them, some of these things continue to happen to them when they visit Goat Island, and only when they come.
So living there makes you a believer.
Oh, I didn't know at the beginning, but after almost 20 years of being subjected to things, there's no question that there is a presence from the other side.
Jeremy, do you hear this from other folks who have taken care of lighthouses?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Seems like almost any lighthouse, if you dig deeply enough, you're going to find a ghost story or two in there. My home base is Portsmouth Harbor Light, so it's a little bit outside the borders of Maine, but we have a lot of ghost stories there. But I won't go into that since we're talking about Maine. But probably the most famous ghost story of a Maine lighthouse would be at Seguin Light off the mouth of the Kennebec River. And if we have a minute or two, I could tell you that story. I'll give you the basics of that story, which goes back to the mid-1800s, they say. This is one of those they-say stories. They say that there was a keeper there who lived there with his wife, mid-1800s, and that the wife became very bored and that she asked her keeper husband for a piano to pass the lonely hours. So the keeper bought his wife a piano. The piano was delivered to the island and brought up the steep path to the keeper's house. But along with the piano, the keeper's wife was given only one piece of sheet music, a popular song of the day, which she quickly learned how to play, and she would play this one song over and over again and over and over and over and over again until it drove her husband insane. And they say he grabbed the axe he had for chopping firewood, proceeded to chop up the piano, and proceeded to murder his wife and kill himself, so they say. And they say that ever since then, if you're on Seguin Island on a quiet day, you're likely to hear that same song being played on the piano over and over and over again. You'll hear that song drifting in the wind, even though there's no piano and no music being played out there. Now, I have done a lot of research on Seguin Island. There's no evidence that anything like that ever happened. There's no evidence of a murder-suicide. But there are many people who swear they've heard that music out there. I know a woman who was walking out there by herself and never heard the ghost story. She heard that music, and she knows what she heard. And the caretaker told her, well, there's no piano, there's no music, there was no music being played, so you must have heard the ghost. So, and she's not the only person, so I don't know.
That's great. We have a tweet from Lucy. A question for Ben. Did you discover anything surprising or new during this process of visiting so many lighthouses in Maine?
Yeah, I actually liked the fact that we did some lighthouses that I wouldn't have considered visually spectacular before this project, but places like Boone Island and Matinicus Rock were argued for by the editors, mostly because of the great stories behind them. And I actually got the chance to go out to Boone Island on a boat, and it was amazing. It's just this huge stone pillar. I think it's the tallest lighthouse in New England.
It is.
At 133 feet, and it's amazingly remote. There's awesome stories about cannibalism, maybe in some cases.
A shipwreck that occurred there, yeah.
So all these stories behind the lighthouses were just wonderful, and really lucky to work with an awesome editor-in-chief, Brian Kevin, kind of put all that together and sent me out, and it was really fun to put together the story.
And on Facebook, for parents, there's a wonderful children's book called Keep the Light Burning, Abby, the story of Abby Burgess, daughter of a lightkeeper in Penobscot Bay who kept the light burning during a horrific winter storm when her father was off island. So thanks for that. Mary Elizabeth on Facebook says, are there any main lighthouses you can stay in, like an Airbnb? Do you know the answer, Jeremy, or anybody?
Well, there was the Isle of Ho. Lighthouse was a B&B. Not anymore. It's weekly rentals now. The Cuckold's Lighthouse was a B&B. That has closed. Let's see. Let me think quickly here. Well, Little River Lighthouse, which is under the American Lighthouse Foundation, is open for overnight stays seasonally during the summer months. So go to littleriverlight.org, I believe is the website, or go to the American Lighthouse Foundation website, which is lighthousefoundation.org. You can find more information on that. But that is a fantastically beautiful place. A Little River Lighthouse is open.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Lucy says, I live in Georgetown. This is an email. I used to hear the foghorns from Seguin and Pond Island, but not anymore. What happened to the foghorns?
Well, Scott could answer this, I'm sure, but just real briefly, they're now Mariner operated. Most of the foghorns in Maine, some are on 24 hours, but the ones that are not are now Mariner operated, so people can turn them on with their VHF radios from their boats is how they work now. And mostly they're not being used these days, but maybe Scott wants to add to that.
No, that's correct, Jeremy. When they changed the system several years ago, and you do have to have a VHF radio and go to channel 83 alpha and click your mic 5 times, 1 second apart. But most of the mariners do not know that. I'll get calls on my cell phone from some of the lobstermen that will ask me, hey, how do I turn on the foghorn? And also, when we're on the island and it's foggy, we turn it on ourselves and make sure it stays operational.
How long has that been the system?
Several years now. I'm not sure if I get exactly what year it started. Whaleback Lighthouse in Kittery was actually the first one in New England to have that system.
And so can someone find out more about that by going to the Coast Guard website? Is that where you'd find out more about how to?
Yes. There's information readily available all over the various internet sites about that. But it's been going on for a while. Gradually, they're basically the equipment they were using for the fog sensors ceased to be made, so the replacement parts weren't available, that type of thing. So they switched to this new system.
I love the sound of a foghorn. We're going to go to Fred calling from Bath. Hi, Fred. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I served on Seguin as a Coast Guardsman right out of boot camp back in the late 60s. And when it was a bachelor station, it was a wonderful experience. I would not have trained that for any other military experience. And that I, in the 9 months that I spent there, I did not hear the piano playing once. We also had Christmas. It was still when the flying Santa Claus was servicing other lighthouses, but I guess grown males didn't qualify for getting presents at Christmas. But Seguin is a treasure that many people don't realize is accessible by the public, and I really want people to know that because it's the second oldest lighthouse on the coast of Maine, and more importantly, it has the last first-order Fresnel lens that was originally installed in 1840s that is operational. In other words, it's being used as it should be. It's not stuck on a pedestal in a museum. You can go out and this is a lens that's so big that you can stand inside of it. It's so tall. Very impressive. Beautiful location. It's served by volunteer keepers all summer long, and there is a ferry boat that goes from Popham Beach out to the island every day if you get reservations.
Oh, that sounds really wonderful. Fred, thank you so much for calling, which reminds me that, you know, Fred says Seguin is open to the public. Many lighthouses are not, but coming up very soon is a rare opportunity, an annual opportunity for people to see lighthouses that are usually closed. Jeremy, do you want to tell me about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Maine Open Lighthouse Day, an annual event, which this year comes on September 14th, Saturday, September 14th. It's the second Saturday in September. I believe 2008 was the first year. And it is sponsored by the American Lighthouse Foundation, along with the Coast Guard and the Maine Office of Tourism, along with many individual lighthouse organizations that run a lot of these lighthouses. And about a couple of dozen lighthouses take part each year in Maine, and about 15,000 to 18,000 visitors visit the lighthouses on that day. And quite a few are open that aren't, as you said, are not normally open. So it's a wonderful event. People can go to the American Lighthouse Foundation website, lighthousefoundation.org, and see a list of all the participating lighthouses. And it's a really great opportunity to visit these lighthouses. It's a lot of fun.
Ben, we're not going to let you go without getting some photography tips. If somebody wants to get just that fantastic picture of a lighthouse, what do you recommend?
I usually start by trying to, you know, think about what kind of story I want to tell about the lighthouse. So maybe I'll include, you know, ideally a passing boat, storm waves, possibly the moon coming up behind the lighthouse to tell the story of the tides. Use a tripod, photographed at the end of the days usually, but whatever fits the story. And then when I'm composing, I try and include a leading line such as the shoreline or the striations in the rocks, you know, famously in Pemaquid. And also, people really love reflections in puddles for lighthouses. I'm not sure what it is, but every time I post an image with a puddle reflection with a lighthouse tower in it, people just go nuts.
A puddle reflection with a lighthouse tower. Okay. And how does one take a picture of somebody in front of a lighthouse and do it well?
You probably want to overexpose because lighthouses are painted white. Your camera wants to meter for a middle gray tone. So if you take a picture of someone in front of the lighthouse and it's metering off that bright background, you're going to underexpose the person. So if you can, manually override that and overexpose to properly expose the person.
All right. Scott, we were talking about Lighthouse Day. Will you be open that day?
We certainly will. And we are open most every day in the summertime. Goat Island is accessible about 3 hours before high tide until 3 hours after. You can go on a kayak tour, bring your own boat out, or there's also a company out of Kennebunkport called Eco Tours that is bringing people over as well. And so we have probably 12 to 1,500 visitors between July and August, so it's been a very busy summer. But if you have a chance to come out, please do. We'd love to meet you.
So it doesn't interrupt what you're doing, all that work. You just keep on working and sometimes recruit people to help.
That we do. We have work parties during the week, and that's a way a lot of people are able to come out and experience the island, and we can get a little bit of work done at the same time.
Oh, well, this has been such a fantastic program. I apologize to all of you who are hanging on the line and have sent an email, and I haven't been able to get to them in the hour because this has been so popular. And thank you to our guests, Jeremy Dontremont, president of the Board of Directors and historian with the American Lighthouse Foundation, Scott Dombrowski, the longtime caretaker of Goat Island Lighthouse, and Ben Williamson, staff photographer for Down East Magazine. And again, Down East Magazine's issue this month, the new issue, ranks Maine's 65 lighthouses, but more important, has some fantastic photographs of them and some really fun information about the lighthouses. And as you mentioned, September 14th, always the second Saturday of September, Open Lighthouse Day in Maine. We'll post all sorts of links at mainecalling.org. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.